Hello, welcome to another episode of the Liberators Network podcast. I am Christian Verwijs, and in this episode we're going to talk about all the things that are wrong with maturity models. This episode may be a bit more of a rant than what you're used to from us. But for Barry and me, there is something inherently wrong with maturity models that we have to address. It has to do everything with assumptions that maturity models make about growth and human development, and it has everything to do with the kind of language that maturity models introduce into the workplace. So what do we actually mean by a maturity model? Well, if you simply spend some time on Google searching for Agile or Scrum-related maturity models, you'll find maybe a dozen of them. There are many of them out there, and most companies even have their own. You have the Agile Development Maturity Model, for example, the Agile Maturity Curve, the Continuous Delivery Maturity Model, and you have many other examples that you can find on Google. In this episode, we don't want to single out an individual maturity model. This episode is about using maturity models in general. Now, all the models that I mentioned have in common that they are about maturity and about being able to say when is a team actually mature. And usually in the models, that means that on the left are all the things that are not desirable, not mature in terms of the model. And on the right side are the things that are considered mature. Some models go from bottom to top, but the idea is the same. Whenever you use models of any kind, it's always important to think about the assumptions that are behind the models, because they tell you a lot about the worldview that is behind them or in how they're used in the workplace. Now, if you look at the various maturity models, they usually assume three things. The first is that growth is a linear progression through a number of discrete phases, where each phase is marked by unique characteristics, behaviors, or skills. A second assumption is that growth usually looks the same across organizations, teams, and individuals. It's a model, after all. The context may affect the path, but it doesn't affect the phases, the characteristics of the phases, or in what order they occur. And the third assumption is that what is on the right of the maturity model is generally assumed to be good, whereas the things on the left are assumed to be bad. This makes maturity models highly normative. Reality is far messier than your maturity model. I can easily challenge all the assumptions behind these models that I just mentioned. For one, growth is not linear and it doesn't happen in discrete phases marked by convenient external characteristics. If you take a closer look at the models, you'll find that you probably do things that appear in different stages of each model. For example, I don't believe that there are teams that only exhibit the characteristic of level 1 in the Agile maturity curve, but none of the others. But what does that mean? How do we interpret their maturity in this case? And how about the things that you're doing and that are very helpful in your environment but are not mentioned by the model? What does that mean? Are these things good? Are these bad? How mature are they? Should we stop doing them? And then there's the question of how to interpret the characteristics in the first place. If a maturity model says something like lack of unit test coverage, does that mean there are no unit tests at all? Does it mean that there are some unit tests, but not enough? Or does it mean that the coverage is 100%, but that the unit tests never break, which is generally a very bad sign? And what about a characteristic like department leaders have ownership in and support Agile? What do we mean by ownership? Does it mean that leaders talk about Agile? Does it mean they attend important events? Does it mean they are actively involved in resolving impediments? Or are they so invested that they're constantly getting in the way? Again, a single checkbox in a maturity model doesn't do justice to reality. And this also ties into the question of who is actually using and interpreting the maturity model. Is it an external consultant? Is it the person him or herself? Is it management? And this is where the next issue that we have with maturity models comes into play. Employees are not children. The very name of maturity models and the driving metaphor behind them encourages the use of language where we distinguish people, teams, and organizations based on their maturity. And implied in that metaphor is that it is possible for a professional adult to be immature, not mature, or simply not grown up. This begs the question, why are we using a metaphor in a professional context that frames growth in terms of human development from children to mature adults. Imagine that you're working in an organization where most of the Scrum teams are ranked on one of the lower levels of a maturity model. Considering them immature, isn't it likely that we'll encourage exactly the kind of micromanaging behavior that we're trying to move away from with self-organizing teams? After all, if a team is not mature, this may easily lead to the conclusion that they need strong guidance of a parent. But what a team may need instead is more freedom, especially if organizations aren't used to that. And perhaps some help in dealing effectively with that freedom. But we don't need to encourage more organizational parenting. There's already plenty of that happening. And the same goes for the use of words like level in these models. How are we making people feel if we consider their growth as a game where they have to level up? How do we feel about people that are ranked above or below our level in this organization? Models, intended to simplify reality. Of course, maturity models are meant to simplify the complexities of reality. But what is gained by squeezing such a messy, non-linear thing as the professional growth of individuals, teams, and organizations into an easy, digestible model that allows us to feel like we're making decisions based on something tangible? Wait, maturity models are the best friend of consultants. They are easy to understand and may seem very profound at first. It's an easy way to make a good impression. This makes them excellent snack food for consultants and for organizations that are looking for easy answers to their complex problems. After all, if you're a consultant, using your maturity model and coming up with a nice report that tells the organization where they are in a model is a really good way to sell your services. But just like with snack food, what looks appealing at first glance and seems to hit the spot when you consume it, it doesn't actually offer anything of substance on closer inspection. And it might even be bad for you. So now what? We understand there is a need for simplified models to create some order in the messiness of reality. And we also understand that models can help start important conversations about what is important, why, and how to make progress on that. But do we really need to use maturity models for that? If we use Scrum, isn't the only thing we should care about whether or not we are capable of releasing a done and valuable increment that addresses important needs from stakeholders at least at the end of every sprint? Keeping a laser focus on this will illuminate all the impediments that are getting in the way and serve as a perfect vehicle for continuous improvement. And can't we just have those courageous conversations without feeling the need to quantify and qualify the maturity of people, teams, and organizations according to some external consultant with a maturity model that doesn't consider your unique context? And can we please reframe those conversations in terms of experience or growth? Some people are more experienced, others less so. Some people have had more time to grow in their skills and abilities, others have had less. But in the end, we're all mature adults, and most of us are absolutely professionals. Let's never forget that. Now, what is your take on this topic? What is your experience with maturity models? Do you agree with our rant, or do you strongly disagree? Let us know in the comments. We always like to have your feedback. This episode was in part made possible by three people who signed up to become patrons since the previous episode. Simon, Patrick Schuder, and Christian Graham, thank you very much for your kind and generous contributions to our work. If you like this podcast or the other content that Barry and I create, you can consider becoming a patron yourself. It's easy to do. But you can also support us by joining one of our public paid events or by buying something from our webshop. And with that, we've reached the end of this episode. Thank you very much for listening and taking time out of what is probably a very busy day to learn something new and something that's hopefully helpful to you. We hope to see you again in the next episode. Have a great day.